Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And as part of our series in the run-up to Britain's royal wedding, we're taking you back to the late 1940s, and an African king-in-waiting is about to lose his throne for marrying a white woman. Michal Hussein reports.
Into each life some rain must fall.
It's the late 1940s in post-war Britain. After a stint as a driver in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, Ruth Williams has recently been demobilised. She's now 23 and lives with her family in Blackheath in London when she meets a young man.
Into each heart some tears must fall.
We've met a few times and we discovered that we liked the same type of music. Always jazz. People like the Ink Spots. Of course, Ella Fitzgerald. And basically, I suppose we have quite a lot of in common.
But the young man she has so much in common with is African. Seretse Khama is the future king or chief of Bechuanaland, a British protectorate which will later become Botswana. He's come to London to study law.
But too much is falling in my...
It was Ruth's sister Muriel who first met Seretse whilst working for the London Missionary Society. She still remembers how, despite their different backgrounds, Seretse and Ruth were immediately attracted to each other.
I never met an African. I hadn't even really ever given it a thought. And when Ruth met Seretse, he was the first African that she had met. They clicked from the word go. They were just attracted. You know, you get this attraction. It's impossible to describe, but it's just there.
But when I think of you, another shower starts.
Now, in those days, white and black did not go out together, especially a white girl with a black man. So we had some quite interesting experiences at Charing Cross Station with people being quite vocal in their disapproval.
After several months of courtship, Seretse proposed, but with a caveat, she would have to move to Africa. So before answering, he asked Ruth to think carefully.
He said he didn't want me to go out and then to discover that I just could not handle the life and I would want to come back, because he said he would never want to live in England. He only wanted to live at home.
But Ruth wasn't put off and said yes.
We were very much in love. We really were. It wasn't a sudden decision. It wasn't something we hadn't thought out. We knew that we were going to upset our immediate families. But then at the same time, we didn't want to live apart.
Seretse wrote to his uncle, who, following the death of his father, had become regent, to give him the news.
My dear Uncle Shekedi, I realize that this matter will not please you because the tribe will not like it, as the person I am marrying is a white woman. I realize that it was my duty to have asked your consent, but I know you would refuse, and it would be very difficult for me to disregard your advice. Please forgive me.
Cable from Shekedi to Seretse Khama. You are apparently taking no notice of my strong objections to your marrying an English girl. Have asked Commonwealth Office to arrange your immediate return.
But the couple ignored Shekedi's message and set the date of their wedding for Saturday, the 25th of June, 1948. Ruth wore a dress of turquoise wool, Seretse a dark suit.
Now, unfortunately, Shekedi wrote to the London Missionary Society asking them to stop the wedding. And they contacted the Bishop of London, and he telephoned the vicar the morning of the marriage to say he wasn't to marry them. So he rang Ruth and Seretse. I was in the flat that morning. He said, I can't marry you. But he said, if you would like to go to the local cathedral this afternoon, there's a big service and the bishop will be there and you can ask him. So the three of us went to this church. We sat for 2 or 3 hours through this long ordination service. We saw the bishop at the end, who did not want to see us. He said to me, you're the elder sister, you should stop Ruth getting married to Seretse. I'm not going to approve it.
It became clear that the church would not grant them a religious wedding. But as a law student, Seretse knew there was no legal reason to stop them from having a civil one.
On Monday morning, he went to a registry office, bought a special license, and then the Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock, they arranged to get married. Well, there were just Ruth and Seretse and my cousin and me. After we'd been sitting there for about 15 or 20 minutes, one of these officers came up and said very politely, "Mr. Karma, can I speak to you for a minute, please?" And they thought, oh my goodness, he's going to stop it. Anyway, when Sorezzi got inside, he said to him, "You have written that your father was a tribal chief. What is that?" So Sorezzi said, "Oh, put gentleman farmer." So that was a relief. So they were married. And then that evening they had a party in the flat.
Their wedding may have been low-key, but its consequences were wide-ranging. First, Sorezzi had to go back home to face his people.
"You are angry with me because I will not leave my wife, a woman that you do not want. Even though there is this disagreement, I still want to be your chief. You all say you do not want the woman. I tell you now, I cannot leave her."
After several weeks of deliberation, Sorezzi managed to turn his people around and was recognized as their chief. But Bechuanaland was a British colony, and any new chief also had to be endorsed by the British government.
It was discussed in Parliament. Churchill got involved in it. And it was even on the front page of the papers that Churchill said that they were a very brave couple, even though he didn't approve of the marriage. So they sent out a team to look into the suitability of Sorezzi to be the chief. And of course they had a lot of protests from South Africa because they said, "We don't approve of a coloured couple being in such a prominent position next to us." So the British government exiled Sorezzi, even though the committee that went out there couldn't find anything wrong with the marriage.
Letter to the Times: "I have been banished from my people and also from the land to which I belong. For what? No crime, except that I have married an English woman. The present law in South Africa forbids the marriage of a native to a European. There is no such prohibition anywhere in the colonial empire. The British people have to ask themselves, is our conscience clear over the whole event?"
Finally, in 1956, after 6 years of campaigning, Sorezzi and Ruth were allowed back into Bechuanaland together, but only on the condition that Sorezzi renounced his throne.
Sorezzi Karma arrived home in Bechuanaland today after 6 years of exile in Britain. At the airport at Francistown, where more than 3,000 people had gathered, there were scenes of almost hysterical enthusiasm.
"Had we not had the aggro, would have been better. Even after we were married, they were still trying to separate us. We were stubborn, but other people were equally stubborn in their attitude by trying to prevent us."
After independence in 1966, Sorezzi Karma became Botswana's first elected president, a post he kept until his death 14 years later. During his rule, he allowed his country to act as a haven for refugees and anti-apartheid activists from South Africa. Throughout it all, Ruth was by his side.
When Sorezzi was setting up the political party, he travelled all over Botswana, and one of these times the car broke down. So, of course, Ruth had been in the WAF. She had 3 months training in car maintenance, so she got out and fixed the car. So he said, "Well, I certainly married the right woman."
Sorezzi and Ruth had 4 children together. Their son Ian is Botswana's current president. Ruth died in 2002, but her sister Muriel still lives in Botswana, where she's retired.
Michelle Hussein. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.